Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night. Welcome to, it's the Truman Show now.
I was going to say.
The Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective. And in case you don't see me, welcome to the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
We have literally been recording less than 10 seconds. We're already talking about films.
I know, it is a film podcast after all.
It's a good film. And I've seen it.
I hold The Truman Show as one of the handful of perfect films. I think The Truman Show is as good as cinema gets.
Interesting. I'm trying to think of like a scene I don't like in it, and I'm kind of struggling. It's very good. I'm very much, and every listener is aware of this, usually when there's another guest on, you start talking about a film, I kind of sit back and leave you two to discuss it.
Sure.
Chances are I've not seen the film. However, in this case, I actually have, and I love it.
Yeah.
So that's good. Well, that can't be said for Uncle Boomer, who can record his past lives, yet.
One day you'll watch it. Yeah, Cammy isn't here as well, so he can't spout the incorrect opinion that Ed TV is better, which it isn't.
Of course.
As I say, The Truman Show is... it's one of the very small number of films that I come out of every time I finish watching it, and I go, that's...
You come out?
That's as... yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah, every time you watch it.
Yeah, Israel Folau gets furious. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, no, that's it. That's the best. I don't know how you can make a film better than that, you know. Singing in the Rain. Yeah. I went to see Inception in IMAX, the 10th anniversary re-release they did a few weeks ago. I got it from that. I got it from, like, how do you make a film better than that? You know, that's
fair
as
enough.
Good as it gets.
Good
Truman
film.
Show is on that quite short list. Annie Hall, but I haven't watched it since Woody Allen became... It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah, it's a Wonderful Life probably sits on there as well.
Right.
Why are we doing this? Squid Rugby World Cup perspective.
Oh, yeah, talking about rugby.
Podcast about rugby, nominally. In which we go through games for the 2011 Rugby World Cup at the minute. And the Rugby World Cup 2011 game of actual rugby that did play
video game.
Was the USA against Australia.
Hang on a second. Was the game that I just spent 80 minutes watching a video game the whole time?
No, you've watched the wrong thing.
Oh,
each team,
okay.
They did an esports thing alongside. Each team nominated someone to play. What was the biggest esport in 2011?
That's a really good question. 2011's a funny year.
Yeah.
What was big in 2011? I can tell you, here's a fun fact about 2011. 2011 was the direct midpoint between Crazy by Gnarls Barkley and Harambe memes.
Why would you know? Why would...
I looked it up for an earlier episode of this podcast, but never used it.
What? Right, okay.
Yeah.
Do you want some big video games from 2011?
Go on.
Portal 2, which I think is excellent. Portal 2 is very good.
Okay,
Skyrim
enough.
Was the biggest game of that year.
Oh, okay. That was that year.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, Uncharted 3, which I went back... I realised I never finished. I went
None
back
of these
to
games
after Last of Us 2, and
by the way,
it feels like it was made in the Atari. Gears of War 3, Super Mario 3D Land, which is excellent. There was an Assassin's Creed game, unsurprisingly. You know, Sonic Generations.
Okay.
Little Big Planet 2. Little Big Planet 2, right, that was what they played. All of the players came together and they had a game of Little Big Planet 2, which honestly seems like the kind of game that Blaine Scully would enjoy.
Yeah, it probably is. If Blaine Scully, best friend of the podcast, is listening, I hope he's having a great day.
Likewise.
We have a lot to talk about Blaine Scully from this game, I'd imagine.
I imagine so. So, to move on to the game eventually, having been through every art form... Yeah, go on.
Before we carry on.
Fine.
Your name is Robbie,
who cares?
A.K.A. Squidge.
Sure, what's yours?
I guess mine's Will Owen.
Great, well done. The game is Australia 67, the USA, the United States of America, that is for anyone who isn't aware, 5. That is the score, by the way. That's not the number of those countries there are in the world.
Yeah, like
there
the
is
population.
Only one of each, yes. It'd be a hell of a stat if if so, but it's not. If there are only five people in the US, yet they feel it's the 15.
Yeah.
It explains why so many of them were born in South Africa, etc.
Insert joke about Samoan rugby team being all, oh yeah, well they've got five people, they poach all New Zealanders, or the other way around, but, you know.
You know, that stat about Kieran Volunteer, his first time he visited Samoa was his second cap.
Which is so funny. And like, I don't know whether he sung the anthem on his first cap or what, or like beat the badge or anything, but there's got to be a sense of irony when you're running out in a Samoan kit and thinking, maybe I'll go here one day.
However, the teams, the people running out in the Australian and United States of America kits, to be smooth, so Australia had just lost to Ireland. That was kind of the big result, the big upset of the tournament. I don't think Australia saw it coming. They'd come into the tournament as a really strong Australia's team.
Careful calling it a big upset after Tom took exception to that last time.
Of course, yeah. But I think from an Australian point of view, it was, because they just won the Rugby Championship. They'd beaten the All Blacks earlier that year.
Absolutely.
They'd also had the famous Hong Kong game the year before, where they'd won.
They didn't lose to Samoa.
Yes. If we take that aside, that's kind of the exception. And it's a really good...
It's such a good Australian side, isn't it?
Yeah. So, Curly Beale at the fullback with Adam Ashley Cooper and Drew Mitchell on the wings. Quade Cooper and Will Genia as the halfbacks. I'm skipping over the centres for now. Palotta now at hooker with James Slip, like peak James Slip as well, back when he was Reds captain when they won Super Rugby. They've got Rob Simmons and Nathan Sharp in the second row. Nathan Sharp, right, did you see his lineout stats in this game?
Oh, wait, no, I did. He didn't call like 11 lineouts himself.
He took 14 lineouts.
That's mental. He's really taking the piss at that point, isn't he?
I know. Then they had an injury, so Rocky Elsom comes in to fill in, which, fine, you know. Yeah. Who, of course, again, that year had been man of the match in the Heineken Cup final when Leinster won their first title. Remember that? Remember when Leinster had never won a Heineken Cup?
Yeah, wow. Now they're winning them as a hobby.
Yeah, except this year. Ben McCalman moved into seven, which we'll come on to.
Yeah.
And Wycliffe Palu played his first game for the Wallabies in 2.5 years at number eight.
Wow, was it?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
He was...
Because it always seemed like the general consensus that he was kind of the Wallabies' number eight. Because nobody else was really, like, much of an eight. Like, Radiki Samo ended up taking that mantle and, you know, really running with it. But, you know, maybe Radiki Samo would be useful somewhere in the back line. Who knows? We'll come on to that.
But, yeah, so Palu had been due to play in one of the warm-up games. Right. But he'd had a series of shoulder issues. So he had shoulder surgery after a game in 2009 in the autumn.
Right.
I believe it was the autumn, might have been the Tri-Nations. So he had to have his shoulder completely reconstructed. He played Super Rugby. He then got injured in one of the last games. He thought he was okay to play for the Wallabies in the lead-up in one of the warm-up games or the Tri-Nations. He couldn't play. He couldn't make it. And then didn't play again until this game against the USA. So he plays about 60-odd minutes and he comes off looking pissed off. Like he looks kind of sad almost at the fact that he's had to be brought off.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, with this Australian side, I would like to point us in the direction of an expert bit of punditry from our favourite pundit on the ITV channel for this World Cup, which is Mr. Lawrence Dallaglio. So, Lawrence Dallaglio says, just before the team's running out, never write off Australia in any sporting context whatsoever.
Okay.
So, this means that automatically, if you're Australian, you're automatically good at any sport.
That's true.
So, explains why they've won the Olympics.
Well, you know, never write them off. Not that they'll win, never write them off. They're always in the contest. You know, like, they're always like second or third.
They're trying the hardest. Yeah.
Like, of course, we know from Lawrence Lally's previous punditry in this World Cup that a lot of the players in the Canadian team played ice hockey.
Exactly.
So that's the sporting context which you wouldn't write them off. So surely all of these Australian players have played other sports, so that makes them good at
Course, rugby, because ice hockey and rugby famously have a lot of crossover.
They have exactly the same sport.
Jesus Christ, how does he have a job?
He's got to pay for it somehow. He's got to pay for his other activities somehow.
Yeah. This is aside from all of that. How does he have a job talking about rugby?
He's got a cool voice. That's, you know, he's
his
got
voice
a cool
is
voice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really annoying. But, yeah, just get Eddie Butler in, man. He's got a really cool voice and at least knows something about rugby, you know? But
Both former number eights, but only one of them ever threw the stupidest pass you've ever seen against Australia, funnily enough.
That's true.
That's okay, worth looking up for anyone that hasn't seen it. From Eddie Butler's playing career, very good number eight, but he did spend it behind. He was the number eight behind the Pontypool front row, which is one of the most famous front rows, most famously dominant front rows in rugby history, if not the most famous actually. And over Flats and Ding Dong.
A lovely video with him talking to Chris Corker and about and doing like a commentary over the top of that pass, knowing it's coming. It's very funny. Look that up. We're not being paid by Eddie Butler, but
or Chris Corcoran. But yes, no, it's funny. Eddie Butler would definitely not pay us to show the worst moment of his career.
I don't think many people would.
No, I mean, I might, but we're not going to talk about it.
I mean, we kind of asked Blaine Scully to talk about his.
we did, in fairness.
I hope you're having a great day, Blaine.
The USA team, to move on to it, starts with Mr. Blaine Scully at fullback. He is joined in the back three by... Okay, now both
should we talk about this? Yeah.
Both good players, but it's amazing that there's professional wingers out there as recently as 2011 called Kevin and Colin.
Wow. I didn't think of it that way.
Kevin and Colin on the wings.
Yeah.
Kevin and Colin. Like, they're not popping to B&Q on a Sunday, you know, to sort out the new garden. No. These are playing on the wings against Drew Mitchell and Adam Matthew Cooper. Yeah.
Like, they could have put Digby in as well. You know?
Yeah.
The options were endless. Wow, I didn't think of it that way. Well, should we just talk about your affinity with Colin Hawley?
Sure. Okay.
I'm not sure why I'm telling this story, but once again, this comes up surprisingly often. There's so many players where we talk about, oh yeah, well, I remember them on the Rugby World Cup 2011 video game, which again, we still play all the time. And there was this one time when you were playing as the USA and you got the ball as Colin Hawley. Presumably, neither of us had heard of him before. And you just really screamed, "Go on, Colin!" And from there on, he was Colin.
Yeah, well, he turned someone inside out and scored in the corner. I remember it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Do you remember who
he
was against?
He sort of swerved around. I don't remember. I remember the finish. I remember him kind of like swerving around being a really fancy finish. Like, he almost did a pirouette.
Oh, nice.
Like Vance Onclair style. Spoilers for this tournament.
Yeah,
but Colin Hawley became a close favourite of mine.
Yeah,
and I became very excited to see him because he didn't play in the USA's first two games. He certainly didn't start.
No.
And then he came in here. Yeah, he only ever won 7 caps, but he made it into that video game in the default lineup.
Yeah.
So I think that's worth it.
Absolutely it is. Now, so moving on to the front row for the USA. So they had Sean Pittman playing on the loose head, who had played in the tight head previous week. And they had Eric Fry playing on the tight head. And in the national anthems before the match, do you notice what Eric Fry does?
No.
When there's about 2 lines left of the Star Spangled Banner, Eric Fry just uncontrollably screams, "Whoa!" like that. And like really just loses control and just loves the fact that he's playing for his country and whatever. And then like he eventually kind of realizes that that the camera's been on him the whole time and just kind of like sheepishly regathers himself and carries on singing the anthem normally. It's great. I really love it because I feel like, you know, if I was in the Millennium Stadium singing the Welsh anthem, I feel like I would definitely lose control at some point before a glard.
But it's like fully Peggy Vercese starting crying when facing the Welsh anthem because he loved watching it on TV. So at the opposition anthem, he started crying in the 2015 World Cup.
That's amazing.
No, I didn't notice that from Eric Fry, but I did notice Eric Fry basically everywhere on the pitch. So you look at, basically, for the time he's on, I think he comes off the second half.
But
for the first kind of, what is it, 60 minutes or so, Eric Fry, every single try Australia score, Eric Fry's in the background having hauled his ass over to try and make a covering tackle. He doesn't make one, but every single time he seems to be in shot. He's like, you know those books you used to get as a kid where you had to spot the rubber duck on every page?
Sure.
Yeah, he's like that. He's like the duck hidden on every single page. Like, they're just a little Eric Fry in the background of every try Australia score.
There's one thing I really like about this USA team, and I think we could probably move on to the game now, that particularly in the first half, they always worked really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't have that much of a structure going in terms of, like, we spoke before about there's a few teams in the World Cup who are starting just to discover the whole thing about, you know, strategically placing your forwards so they're spread out quite evenly over the pitch.
Australia
conserving
their
fitness and so on. Yeah. We'll come on to that with particularly Rocky Elsom,
who
effectively played like a third centre in this game. But the USA didn't have that whatsoever. But it didn't really matter because like they were all so eager, and particularly in defence, they got off the line so quickly.
Yeah.
And like, obviously the scoreline went against them, but they really played their part.
I've got this jot down that I don't know if I've ever seen a team who go 10-0 down, two tries down after 10 minutes, play better in that time.
Yeah, I think they were the better team.
Yeah, and yet they sort of...
20 minutes.
Because this Australia... I think if this USA team had played against, like, Scotland or Wales or...
Yeah.
Maybe even England, especially in this World Cup, England.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'd have pushed them to within losing bonus point range, I reckon. Like, yeah. Maybe not... I don't think they were organised enough to pull off a win. But they'd have Absolutely. Kept the score close. But they're just unlucky because this Australia team is full of freaks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, there's no other team in this World Cup that's just so damn talented as this Australian side.
Yeah, they have...
And it's just so hard to keep up with.
Exactly. They have the most talent of any team. In, you know, make the All Blacks about level.
Yeah.
But the level, Quay Cooper at his best, Will Genia at his best, Kirtley Beal just on the pitch. You know, as you say, Rocky Elson... Yeah. The level of skill in the forwards as well, and the players they can bring off the bench as well. In like Luke Burgess, excellent player, comes on, is good.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Berrick Barnes is fantastic when he comes on.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I want to talk about the first 10 minutes. As we say, Australia are really kind of under the pump from the USA. That they're really, as I say, like the very first act of the game. Tim Usaz clears the ball, who's playing nine and captain for the USA, and then straight off the back of that, they really bring line speed and manage to smash Quade Cooper, who drops the ball.
Yes.
And then about 5 minutes later, Australia haven't really had any foothold in the game. And then Quade goddamn Cooper manages to step around seven different players and sets up this lovely ball for Beal, who manages to put Rob Horn in the corner. And like, you can still see the fight from the USA team because like Blaine Scully smashes Rob Horn over the try line. And like, really, like, he couldn't have done any more to get him into touch. And like, did you notice that Blaine Scully looked like particularly big in this game?
Didn't
like,
he? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he looked like, you know, very bulky in this game. And like every single time he was the last line of defence, he was really going in to smash people.
Oh, there's a point in the second half, it's for Kirtley Beal's himself's try.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just before halftime, rather. In which Scully covers three men. You know, he kind of covers his man, he hits him, and kind of, he doesn't quite get him to ground, but he knocks him off balance. Like, it would have been effective as a tackle anyway. Yeah. And then you can see him really hairing it to get back and get Beal. And he gets close, like, closer than he has any right to. I felt for him so much, because he has a really good game.
And he's brilliant. And, like, everything that you associate with Blaine Scully, the player...
Yeah.
You know, in like, you know, his career with Leicester Tigers and Cardiff Blues and so on, like, you really manage to get like a taste of that because, like, under the high ball, he's so reliable. He clears the ball really well. He tackles so well. He communicates with his players really well. He has such a good game.
Yeah. And it's such a difficult game to be a fullback.
Yeah.
And when you say that, you tend to imagine it's raining and it's pouring and everyone's kicking the ball miles and you can't see what's going on. But it's just. All game, he's having... There's a line break with two men in support with him, with the guy making the line break, and Scully's left on his own most often to cover this. And a few times he manages it. A few times he manages to stop, like, a three-on-one in the backfield.
There's the second Australian try was finished by Rocky Elsom in the end, and which came from a Kirtley Beal break, which I think Scully covered himself. And then, as Australia then spread it wide, there's a two-on-one between Rocky Elsom and Antfinger.
Yeah.
And... Blaine Scully very cleverly drifts onto Antfinger to prevent him from doing the embarrassing thing and have Antfinger score against America, you know? He protects his country's dignity by letting Rocky Elsom score instead.
And Elsom just makes the right decision. It's such a well-worked try, and I've got this jotted down that... So there's this thing, right? And I think because I saw a YouTube comment yesterday when I was looking up highlights of... I'll tell you what it was, right?
Right.
The famous game in 1978 between Wales and the All Blacks. You know the game. You know the game I'm talking
Which
about.
Which one is this?
The diving at the line-out.
Okay. Okay.
Where, for people that don't know, it's a really famous game written in Welsh folklore. And I think New Zealand to some degree, but it's not as important to them.
No.
1978, Wales are the best team in the world, pretty much, you know. And they need to prove it by playing New Zealand, who were the other best team.
Yeah.
And with, I think, 4 minutes to go, 5-6 minutes to go, the closing stages anyway... New Zealand get a penalty. They kick for the corner. And then the Welsh team look to have nicked the line out, except one of the Kiwis dives. And it's on YouTube. You can look it up.
Yeah.
He properly just jumps out of nowhere. No one lays a finger on him.
And he's spoken about it since.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. He died recently, didn't he, I think? But like, he was very, very open about it. And like, New Zealanders hold him in really high regard as a legend of the All Blacks. Yeah. And like, it wasn't just this game that he saved them, apparently. And I don't mean that via diving. He was allegedly a very good player. I can't remember the guy's name, unfortunately.
I can't. Because another Kiwi then joined in as well, sees him and then dives as well.
Yeah.
So the referee then gives a penalty for, you know, shoving at the line out, taking him out of the ball.
Yeah.
New Zealand kick it, win the game. And this is something that the Welsh are still angry about. In a way, we probably wouldn't talk about it as much if we'd actually won the game.
No. Yeah. We'd have left that alone.
But there was a comment on the video saying, God, there's more drama in this game than most modern match, in the last 5 minutes of this game, than most modern matches put together. And then someone replied saying, ha ha, so true. Then the guy replied saying something about how, you know, there's no flair and structure and, you know, like, there's nothing going on in these games, like the skill level's so much lower, players can't play anymore. That thing that Jiffy said about how players aren't coached to have flair anymore.
Yeah.
And Stuart Barnes said he'd get rid of all analysts. Yeah, give them a chance. Just
ridiculous.
But maybe that's why this was in my head, but that Rocky Elsom try, right, if you want to go and have a look at it, it's a really nice try. The whole game's on YouTube if you want to see it. It's a excellent try, but it's all structure. You know, it's all players knowing what lines they're going to run.
Absolutely.
And it's all built on that. And it's actually, you're using your flair within that structure, within that set. And people look at that and go, God, just all the flair of that Australian team. But actually, it's down to structure. It's down to players just being smart and understanding the game.
Yeah. And particularly forwards, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, forwards were less expected to be able to do that and sort of map out the game plan themselves. But this Australian team, like, the forward pack was so independent in their decision making.
Yeah.
And Elsom was a particularly, you know, big example of that. And this try really shows that.
Absolutely. And you kind of skimmed over it on the first try. Quade Cooper's run, right? You then say, oh, he just finds a nice ball to Beal. No.
Beal's support line's phenomenal.
He has three men in support and Curly Beal basically running behind him. Yeah. And because they've got this kind of psychic link that comes from being brilliant but mad.
Yeah.
Cooper just kind of like hops the ball over his shoulder. He just kind of like drops it behind him, like flows it in the air for a second for Beal to run onto and pick his own line.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And it's, as I say, mad. Like, it takes two complete mavericks to do it.
Yeah.
But it's what creates the try, you know. And then Curly Beal fixes his man and puts him in the corner. But yeah, it's fantastic.
I'd like to move chronologically onto the next try of the game.
Okay.
Because there's a few different acts.
Oh, my one other note on the Elsom try, right, is everything is great about it, except he puts the ball down really awkwardly.
Because the dummy looks a little bit awkward as well, doesn't
he? That dummy and it's fine. Like, it's a forwards dummy. It's not natural, but he does it. He gets over the line. He runs over the line at full pelt, then he slows himself down, like a lorry slowing down, having been at full tilt, and kind of, and then puts the ball down himself rather than if he just dived, would look great. Even if it was a terrible Jovanico dive, would look great. But instead, he slows himself down to a walking pace, stops still, then puts the ball down.
Sorry, you've just reminded me of what Jovanico's up to now. Anyway,
oh, Jungle Jim, Instagram, head to it, have a look.
Anyway, yeah, no, that Rocky Elsom dummy is very much the dummy of a man who's not intending to pass.
Yes.
But that is, of course, the second most awkward try finish of this game. But we'll come on to the first. I assume you know what I mean. But anyway, so the third try of the match starts off with Tim Usaz making a break from a line-out.
Yes,
and Scott Lavalla coming in support. And never the fastest player, Scott Lavalla, but he really does his best to buy time.
Scott Lavalla, very good player, though.
Oh,
career
with Stad.
Yes. Okay. So I watched most of the game with English commentary, with the ITV commentary.
Right.
However, there's a point in that in which it cuts out for 10 minutes and it just skips forward. So for those 10 minutes, I watched the Australian commentary.
Okay.
Who at one point say Scott Lavalla, who of course plays for Stade Français.
Stade Français?
Stade Français.
Christ.
Stade Français. How do you get it that wrong? Stade Français. Which is even worse.
That sounds like a German pop star.
yeah, I think I own her first single. You know, when she launched herself with Eurovision, Stade Français.
Yeah, no, that definitely sounds like... that's accurate. Like, she supported Carly Rae Jepsen on the last arena tour.
Cool, I know. We should get her on, really. We've got links.
Yeah. Stade Français, next episode.
Yeah. We'll get the lawyers to clear it.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that happens. And then eventually, you see, Nessie Malifa does this pinpoint perfect cross kick for Colin. just Colin,
yeah,
to run onto. And, like, he does this really good job. He tries to step, I think it's Quaid, is the last man, and, like, really manages to do well to stay in play and buy time for his team to support him. Mm. And eventually Malifa also sends for a grubber kick. And Malifa played better than I remember him being in this game. And then they manage to force Wilgenia back over the try line for a 5-metre scrum. Mm. And then what happens?
From the 5-metre scrum?
Yeah.
I didn't realise this was a question. I didn't realise you were making me lead on from this.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so, no, it's fine. No, it's exciting. From the 5-metre scrum, right, so there's some rugby. Basically, right, Australia are in the process of smashing the USA at the scrum. But they don't notice that actually there's a bigger game than just that scrum.
Something's escaped from that scrum.
Yeah, and that something is the number 8, JJ Galliano, who just scores. Like, he just scores. And Rocky Elson realises as he's crossing the try line.
It's so funny watching just, like, Rocky Elson.
He puts an arm out like, no, don't. Stop, come back.
Yeah.
No, don't score
the
try.
There's probably something to be done in, like, the Titanic theme music with that slowed down. It's really funny watching Rocky Elson, like, because this, it's like, dude, you're a world-class player. And, like, you just concede a try because you pushed it to scrum. Like,
yes.
And, like, I think I've heard it before where the Australian commentators on this game were saying, like, that's the only time that I've seen the Australian back row actually push at the scrum this year.
Yeah.
And they've gone and dominated the scrum and conceded a try. And you're right, like, Gaggiano just really, like, it's like he's trying to clock out of his shift 10 minutes early, you know? And he just, like, really subtly slips away and just, oh, bring this with me, and brings the ball and does this really theatrical dive in the corner.
Yeah.
And, like, he's not a I only remember Gaggiano for this try.
Likewise, yeah.
He has 14 caps, so it was one of his two tries.
This was his last cap.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So fair play. That's the last thing, I guess, he has to remember in a USA shirt. But it was a really lovely moment.
He has a really good game.
Yeah.
And he was someone that, when I saw him playing, I went, oh, I remember that guy. Because I hadn't thought about him since. You know, I'd kind of forgotten about him.
I just remember him as the guy who scored that try.
Yeah, and he takes it well. And actually, he has a really good game. You know, his stats across the game are impressive and high. And again, the Australian commentators keep bringing him up and keep bringing up how hard he's carrying. You know, so 13 carries isn't bad for a team who aren't really seeing the ball.
Absolutely,
aren't getting opportunities. You know, 6 tackles as well.
And especially given the non-distribution of the USA forwards. That's just him offering himself constantly.
Yeah. Can I point out 2 things about him?
Go for it.
So, JJ Gaggiano, right? So, he was a student. He's an American dude who then went to uni in Cape Town, played a bit for the Western Province, as well as playing for university in South Africa.
Okay.
I kind of got picked up from there through that system. I think, you know, has lived in Cape Town since, has stayed in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. You know, good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
However, his name is JJ Gaggiano, right? Mm-hmm. His full name is Jonathan Richard Gaggiano.
Huh.
Now,
is it Richard with a J?
Yeah, that's how it's spelled, yeah. And that's what I meant to mention, yeah, he's Jonathan Richard Gaggiano. It's a common name for South African come American men called Jonathan. It's only ever given if the first name is Jonathan. And you want to make it JJ.
Yeah, fair play.
I don't have anything else to say on him.
I thought
he played well, and I guess he's Jonathan Jr., isn't he? That's why it's JJ.
That just occurred to me now,
but never mind.
America.
It's not an interesting side point, but there you go.
So there's 2 more tries in the first half, so should we just talk about them and then move on?
Let's.
Okay, so one of them, it very nearly results in a second USA try when Kevin Swearin runs this lovely inside ball off Malifa, and Rocky Elson just takes the piss at the breakdown. There's a bit of a knock-on. Elson kind of, like, one-handed gets a turnover. He isn't trying at all. Gets a turnover, runs about 30 yards across field, beating men in his wake just with ease.
Yeah.
And then, if he wanted to, he could have probably ran the whole way. And eventually he just kind of thinks, nah, I'm going to share this. So he lets Adam Ashley Cooper do the rest of the work. Mm. Ashley Cooper beats about 4 men just by being strong and fast and just generally very talented. And says, as you say, Curtly Beale scores this try. And Blaine Scully tries to tackle all 3 of those players.
Bless him. Bless him, bless him, bless him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hugely impressive. And it's not. Because it looks initially like, or you could easily have, I've seen situations in which we've seen a forward do that and it looks like ball hogging. That isn't what's going on here. Like, Elsom is taking the correct decision.
Yeah.
And it also, it starts from players from both sides being lazy.
I think selfless, if anything.
Yeah. Players from both sides are being lazy and just waiting for the scrum to be reset once there's a knock on.
Sure.
And then Elsom regathers the ball and goes, fancy scoring.
Like, not on my watch, mate.
Like,
yeah.
We're better than this. And really goes for it. And as I say, offloads to, or passes to, Ashley Cooper, who then gets the offload into Beal. And Curtly Beal, who is just magnificent in that first half. And so much fun. And then he's brought off at halftime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because of an injury. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, is he injured? Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. For the record, I would encourage anybody to watch the tries from this game.
Yeah.
As I say, there's the sort of try packages of everything from this World Cup somewhere on YouTube. And I'd recommend for this game at least watching the try. Well, yeah, probably not watching the whole thing, but watching the tries. Because there's some belters on here. But
oh, absolutely.
One of them, not scored by Drew Mitchell, because his try was just really boring.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Half. Yeah, that's not a, it's not an interesting try at all, really.
Yeah.
He just, he does some, he just picks a good line. Like, he picks a nice line off, they're five meters out from the line. Yeah. And that's
boring.
It.
Boring. Who cares?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Anyway, give me some Adam Ashley Cooper. So Pat McCabe comes onto the pitch. Ashley Cooper then does this amazing run and sets him up after some really lovely hands and a great carry by Radiki Samo, who's just come on, and sets up Pat McCabe in the corner when he could have scored himself. And don't worry, Adam Ashley Cooper, your time will come in about, less than 10 minutes.
Stay patient, you know. Keep on trucking. Keep on going.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
What happens with Adam Ashley Cooper's first try again? Because I've just written AAC scores simple but nice try.
I'm not going to lie to you, William Rees-Owen.
Yeah.
I watched this game about half an hour. I finished watching it before we started recording.
Yeah.
So I've watched that try in the last hour and a half, if not the last hour.
For the record, I watched it last night.
I have honestly forgotten what Adam Ashley Cooper's first try is like.
Yeah. Never mind.
I couldn't tell you.
Was that the one he sprints in from like 60 yards?
I think that's the second one.
Oh,
I've got AAC written. That doesn't help me at all.
Yeah.
Considering if I looked at the score sheet, I can see Adam Ashley Cooper scores in the 59th minute.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what the try was like based on my notes, which just say AAC, which isn't even the player's full name. I get less information than I do from looking at the score sheet.
So his first two tries, I don't really remember what happens, but I'm sure he takes them very well.
I can tell you a moment from commentary in between his tries.
Go on.
So the it's, I think, Scott Hastings on co-coms.
Yes, it is.
I forgot his name.
It's Simon Ward.
Simon Ward, thank you. Yes, I knew that. So Simon Ward is chatting about, there's a lineup setting. Then Scott Hastings starts giving some stats about the line-out and saying, so the USA have won this many line-outs, and from this many line-outs they've then gone on to play rugby, and from these they haven't. And then Simon Ward says, another interesting thing about the line-out is that Peter Jackson lives nearby, and he recorded some sound effects for Lord of the Rings at a cricket match here a few years ago, and he's like a local hero. He lives nearby. He's from here. Everyone loves him. And then Scott Hastings says, yeah. So another interesting stat about that line-out. Just completely ignores him and brings up a stat about how many line-outs the USA lost in the previous game.
It was a baller move from Scott Hastings.
But both
it promotes
them,
him to man of the match.
Yes. In both cases, they're ignoring what the previous one said, but the beginning of the sentence sounds like they're replying to them.
Yeah. It's not how discourse works, mate.
Exactly. It's that thing of people, they're not replying, they're waiting to say what they want. You know, they're not listening, they're waiting to say the thing they want to say. And they're kind of having these two, like, singles, these two monologues in what is being presented as a duologue. I enjoyed it. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. No, yeah, I forgot about that.
I have, you know, in the last week as well, told Nolly Waterman not to bother watching Lord of the Rings. So there's a little name drop for you.
Fair play.
She's never watched a Harry Potter movie.
What?
I don't know if they did or not keep that in. I haven't watched the full edit back.
I can't recall.
Nolly Waterman has never seen a Harry Potter movie.
I had her down as being a Harry Potter fan.
I know.
At least of the Tiger's Winger.
Yes. Me and Brian Habana were talking about Harry Potter, and she said, I've never seen one. Which, this is a hell of a name drop conversation, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And she said she'd never seen... This was, like, after we'd finished the official interview bit, but it was still recording, so I didn't know if they'd leave it in.
So, what did Brian Habana have to offer on Harry Potter?
So, because... basically, I did this thing called Wardrobe B. It was promoting a... I don't know how much of this I shouldn't say, but frankly, I doubt anyone from Wardrobe B is listening 36 minutes into this podcast to you know, whatever. Yeah, I was doing this bit for Wardrobe B. It's to promote the HSBC Sevens Awards.
Yeah.
So I was told by Wardrobe B to mention HSBC a lot. So, you know, so as I mentioned when you mentioned you'd watched it back, like, I referred to it as the HSBC Sevens Awards series.
And I just watched
which
it.
I'd never done otherwise.
I just thought, like, you'd never fucking say that.
No.
You just call it the Sevens.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it the World Series.
Yeah.
Like, unless I'm talking about who won the title, I wouldn't say the World Series.
Yeah.
But no. I had to say the HSBC Sevens World Series, which I can't even say now.
Yeah.
But I could say it when I was, you know, a bit more on edge because I was talking to two World Cup winners.
Sure.
Yeah.
Naturally. Your performance would be higher than talking to your stupid brother, you know?
Yes. As we said in the previous episode as well, because Brian Habana is the nicest person in the world.
Yeah.
I began the interview by asking how you are, you know, how are you doing? And as I was asking my first question, Habana interrupts me to say, how are you doing, Robbie?
Oh,
I know. And so I then said, honestly, I've never won a World Cup, so I didn't think it mattered how I'm doing, but I'm well, thank you. He's such a nice man.
My heart.
And he was just taking the piss out of Nolly the whole way. It was great. But yeah, anyway, Nolly Waterman was doing it in front of a kind of chimney. So she was actually taking time out. She'd gone away for a weekend or for a week or something.
A legend.
She was doing it downstairs in front of this chimney. It had this kind of very old-looking brickwork. And Brian Habana said it looked like Diagon Alley, that she was going to have to tap all the bricks and go in.
Amazing.
Yeah. So me and Brian Habana talked about
it. And that was lost on Nolly.
It was. She had no idea what he was talking. She kind of laughed first time, then Habana made the same joke again, like, 20 minutes later.
That's kind of gutting.
And she was like, I've never seen Harry Potter, I'm sorry.
But then again, he's literally Brian Habana, so he can say what he wants. So.
Exactly, yeah. And so, yeah, then she said, I've never seen one. And I was kind of, as a millennial, slightly offended that could be possible.
Yeah,
Despite J.K. Rowling being enormously problematic now. And then she said, I've never seen Lord of the Rings either. And I said, don't bother with Lord of the Rings, it's fine. Just leave that.
Fair enough.
And she's like, oh, Harry Potter then, okay. I'm saying, like, you've retired now. You've got time. You can read them all as well.
Yeah, do what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Dive also, in, eight of them.
Again, you're literally Nolly Waterman. Do what you want.
Yeah, you know, again, you've scored a try in a World Cup final. You've won a World Cup.
Yeah, like,
you've done all
of
this.
One of,
like,
the best fullbacks of all time.
Exactly. You're one of the most decorated and celebrated female players in rugby history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well done. You know, if you don't want to watch Lord of the Rings, fair enough. Don't want to watch Harry Potter, fair enough.
One of sort of the top five analysts in the world at the minute, frankly.
Oh, or at least Co-com,
on UK television.
She's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, she's
excellent.
Brilliant. But
Should
we wax lyrical instead of about two World Cup winners, but instead about somebody very frustrated to have never won a World Cup? Ashley Cooper's third try.
Yes. Yes.
So it starts with, it's basically first or second phase off the kickoff. Beric Barnes does this lovely crossfield kick within his own 22.
Mm.
And Ashley Cooper himself takes it and offloads to Radiki Samo, whose hands are lovely.
Oh,
and, like, he straight away sets back Stephen Moore on a run on the inside. And Amfinger gets the ball and does a competent offload, which is, you know, good on him.
Hmm.
Ashley Cooper then picks the ball up, throws a lovely dummy himself, and scores the fastest ever World Cup hat trick.
Yes, 7 minutes. Or just under 7 minutes.
Which is insane. Like
six minutes 40. He scores three tries inside that period of time. And then moments later as well, he has a chance for fourth and he gives it to Rodriguez Armo, which to me makes him a world class player. That's why I love Adam Ashley Cooper.
And he's already given the one to McCabe as well.
Yeah. He's fantastic. And he takes all of them really well. You know, they're three very good finishes. You know, none of them are really flop overs.
No.
All of them he has a lot of work to do. You know, it's the one where he picks a great line through the middle after, as you say, his third try. Could have been try of the season if it was finished, if it wasn't for that Quade Cooper can't bloody offload.
Yeah.
You know, that's what everyone says about him.
Yeah.
And yeah, but whereas, you know, he then actually goes, no, I'm going to finish this now. This is on me. This is mine.
Yeah. And so we've spoken about Ashley Cooper scoring three tries. Shall we talk about something which is very disgraceful?
Before we move on, speaking of disgrace, you alluded to a quote from Adam Ashley Cooper that I don't think is widely publicised.
Okay.
That I've gone and looked up now. Yes.
Yeah.
So Adam Ashley Cooper, I think early this start of this year, after the World Cup, after he announced he was retiring from international rugby finally, you know, after how many other years and 118 caps, I think.
Yeah, lots.
On talking about why he... 118 caps, yeah. Why he...
Oh, 121 caps I have here.
Okay.
But still.
That was 118 prior to the World Cup. Okay. Fine. Okay. So, asked why he decided to keep going ahead of 2019 World Cup. He said, I just knew in me at the time, I'm not done. I've always played the game with a chip on my shoulder and it never went away. Certainly didn't after the final of the 2015 World Cup. Then he said, right, and this is speaking, you know, after that World Cup, I have played over 100 tests for the Wallabies, and mate, I haven't achieved a single thing in that jersey, and that's shit. That still fuels the fire. It pisses me off. It still does. So I had that. I had that feeling that I had to hold on to.
Man, it's so, like, you can feel every last shred of that emotion there, can't you?
I know.
Because he was such a good player, and like, he could not have done any more for that Wallaby shit to try and win something.
It's hard to pat yourself on the back, but I'm allowed to say I think I'm proud of what I've achieved. I really am proud. I'm proud to be Australia. I'm proud to represent my country. I'm proud to do so at another World Cup, but I wish I could have done more.
Oh, man.
I feel for him.
In this World Cup, obviously, he was great. In the 2015 World Cup, he was absolutely world class.
Yeah.
And to think that they didn't win it.
He then says, you know, I had that thing drive me to go and give it another track. I don't know, for crack in Japan. I can't really speak today, but, you know, I'm getting away with it.
I can't speak.
Thank you. The interviewer then says, is it like an inner voice? And he says, not a voice, maybe a screw loose. Which, I love Adam. Adam Ashley Cooper is an all-time favourite player, 15 for me.
He's brilliant.
I love him. And he's someone that, you know, in that way I'd get, find Curtly Bill frustrating to watch, even though I love him. I never feel that with Adam Ashley Cooper.
Yeah.
And because he's so confident in every position.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, AAC.
So, a less good player. He has been, on this podcast, 5 times nominated for Dick of the Day. The one and only, Anthony Fayenga, a.k.a. Antfinger, scored 2 tries. Not 1, but 2 tries for the Wallabies in this game.
It's just
one of them
well.
Being the previously alluded to most awkward-looking finish on this when he gets over the line and just kind of flops over because he's not really sure what to do.
It's just as well Blaine Scully drifted off Elson because otherwise we'd be looking
because
at an Antfinger hat-trick. We'd be looking at 3 Antfingers. Like, 3 Antfingers up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so his first try, right? And here's the thing. We've said this before in episodes that I used to really rate Anthony Fayenga until we started watching this World Cup back. And he's been consistently terrible
he's
in every
shite.
Game.
He's been shite, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not beat around the bush here.
So basically, right, his second try he takes well. His second try,
absolutely
fair enough.
Does.
Like, good finish. You know, can't take that away from him.
Yeah.
Whatever. Fine. However, the rest of the game, at one point, he makes what would be a break. He could give a pass. He could give an offload. Instead, he kind of really contorts his arm and flings the ball out the back of his hand into touch. Just little Ben Youngs moment.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, that was lovely because that was with about 2 minutes left to go. And it was really nice just thinking, okay, Antfinger's back.
Yes. Yeah. But the best thing about it as well is that the ball doesn't go straight into touch. Despite the fact he's only a yard away from the touchline, it's such a bad pass that it lands next to the touchline.
Yeah.
Like exactly there. And it takes someone else trying to dive on it for it to go out. It takes someone else trying to get to the ball for it to actually go out. That he's so bad he couldn't even chuck the ball. Like, say what you want, but Ben Youngs was passing the World Cup final. At least he got it into touch. At least he had some conviction behind it.
Yeah, yeah. Like that one when we the Wales-Samoa game we did in this World Cup, where Ben James is talking about the Fotu Ali pass that goes halfway across the field, and the commentator's going, "That's a great pass." I was like, "Yeah, I guess so, but it does go into touch, you know?"
It was Amfinger's first try, right? And you know what? I might just do this now. Here's my dick of the day for that first try.
For scoring?
Well, because it's... Right, okay. So, Anthony Fienga, right. So, basically, right, what happens is Samu hits a... No, not Samu. Wycliffe Palu hits a really good line and, you know, he kind of drifts sideways. He then really straightens up with force, goes between two defenders and frees an arm. Rob Horn times his run incredibly well and takes the offload. So he makes a clean break into the USA 22. He's got no one in support around him. He has a look one way, then decides, I'm going to have to go myself. Scully gets hold of him. Colin Hawley gets hold of him. They bring him to ground. Great. The USA recycle... They don't. They don't need it, sorry. He's able to get an offload in to Anthony Fienga. Fienga then has, on the wing, Drew Mitchell. Yeah. Any competent rugby player would give the pass to Drew Mitchell, who walks in. Okay. Because of this, Colin Hawley, who's tracking across, having helped with the tackle, thinks any competent rugby player is giving the pass here. So therefore, I'm going to follow across and try and get to Mitchell. Instead, Anthony Fienga just barrels right into Colin Hawley and another USA defender, whoever it is, that's trying to help him out. I think it might be USAS. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
He just barrels straight into them. And you kind of think, when he gets the ball, you're thinking, I'm sure that says 13, not 1 or 3. But no, he just goes straight into him with no awareness of the player around him. And because both players are in the process of tracking across, they fall off the tackle. Like, they're kind of in a really awkward position to make that tackle because they're trying to tackle a different guy. They're trying to get across and tackle Drew Mitchell. So finally kind of bounces off them and falls over the try line. And he only scores because he's bad. Like, a good player wouldn't have scored that try. Drew Mitchell would have scored it. And Drew Mitchell runs a great support. So he initially gets up. He's really sprinting to get in support for Horn. And then he adjusts himself correctly. He really slows down and manages to get, you know, time it so that Fienga could have put him in the corner. Doesn't have to. Drew Mitchell doing really good rugby. Anthony Finger doing really terrible rugby. And yet, somehow it comes out as a try. Like, if he'd just been stopped a yard short, you would have gone, oh, he's just bad, right?
Sure.
But because he scores the try, he both looks bad and like a dick. Like, he's a ball-hungry...
Yeah, yeah.
It's his first test try. He, you know, desperately wanted to score it, selfish. He looks like both a bad rugby player and a dick. So he's my dick of the day. I'm jumping the gun and giving it to him.
Yeah. Not that we're doing this now, but I'm not going to give it to him. You've given it to him on all of Australia's games, which is impressive.
It's now tradition.
I'm going to let him off for the fact he scored two tries and also he got very seriously injured at the end of the game. So it feels kind of...
That's true. I did think that. Sorry. Yeah. I forgot he got seriously injured at the end of the game. Yeah. And I did, as I was watching, I think I can't give him dick of the day now. Can't give him dick of the day.
And then 20 minutes past, you go, dick.
Yeah. I will say, though, he's over it now. Like, he's not currently injured.
Yeah.
You know, he's had time to recover.
Of course.
That said, that doesn't make it any better. I don't stand by that at all. Anthony Fienga is my dick of the day.
Before we go properly onto that feature, we'll talk about a certain substitution which happens in the Australian ranks.
Okay.
So at this point, they'd had Quade Cooper playing fullback for them with Beric Barnes playing 10. And so they bring on Stephen Moore in the place of Rob Horn.
Wait, what?
So what happens is Stephen Moore plays hooker. Tatafu Palotta now goes into the back row and plays open side flanker.
Okay.
Ben McCallum goes to number 8. Radiki Samo goes out to the wing. Adamashi Cooper goes to fullback. Quade Cooper goes to fly half. And Beric Barnes plays inside centre.
Right.
So they rejig the entire thing just because it would be a laugh to get Radiki Samo on the wing for 20 minutes. And I tell you what, it was. And he scored a really lovely try, as you say. Like, Adamashi Cooper runs onto the ball brilliantly and sets him up. And Samo shows some toe to finish that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we love Big Diki. I guess the next game against Russia, there's more time to talk about
it. It's a lot of fun, yeah.
as the commentators point out at the time, his previous try was his 70-meter effort against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Which is a moment that will always go down in history. The moment, what was he, 36, 37?
Yeah, that man aged like a fine wine. He got faster as he got closer to 40, which is so impressive.
But yeah, so he finished his try really well. What a late days career he had.
Oh yeah, it's phenomenal. And like the fact that he can say, you know, he got shifted out to the wing when he was in his mid-30s for the Wallabies in a World Cup is brilliant. Yeah, love that guy.
And he continued to play for the Wallabies. He played for them after this World Cup.
Yeah.
He played for them the following year, which I love. You know, he played until he was 41, I think, professional rugby. Professional
and he very gradually became a second row again.
Yes.
But less quick than he was in his youth, but...
His youth being age 36.
Yeah, exactly. But I reckon now, he's one of those ageless players that if you put him in like a Vets game now, he would be quicker than most of the backs.
Yeah,
genuinely.
Yeah.
Get
him in the Bermuda Classic. Bermuda Classic next year.
Oh, yeah, he'll be unplayable.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say on the match, I think, before the closing ceremony. Okay.
The one other thing I think we should probably touch on is the yellow card at the end.
Okay.
Because...
Dick of the day territory here.
Oh, really? Is that your... Okay.
So, my dick of the day is Nigel Owens for the fact that he had the audacity to sin bin the world's nicest, well-meaning fullback, Mr. Blaine Scully.
Hmm.
So, for the record, I also had written down the amp finger passing to touch and Adam Ashley Cooper once being unmarked and passing back inside to somebody who's very heavily marked after scoring his three tries because he couldn't be bothered to run any further. But yeah.
I did notice that as well.
Yeah. I have written down Nigel bins Blaine and then no.
I'll say two things on this. One, is he on a card?
I don't care.
That's a deliberate knock on.
I don't care.
But, right, think about it. If you're Nigel Owens, you're a man of his persuasion. Can't blame him for calling Blaine Scully over.
True.
You know, he calls him over. He's like, handsome lad.
Why send him to the bench, though? He's a very handsome lad.
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know what the process is. Maybe he has to make him fill out some paperwork to process a yellow card afterwards or something. I don't know.
But then there's a moment when I think it's after Samo's try, where it just cuts to Blaine Scully sat on the bench and he looks really sad.
Yes, I know.
And it really, like, genuinely, like, kind of upset me looking at that and going, oh no, just let them score, please, Australia. Because, like, the USA played really well, and obviously Blaine Scully in particular, like, I don't remember him getting that yellow card until it actually happened. And, like, I was just thinking about, like, oh yeah, how great Blaine's been in this game, and just, like, you know. Yeah, after hearing him talk about the Russia game, obviously thinking about how great it would be, thinking about how he reflects on how he played in this game, because obviously the USA lost by quite a lot. But as he said on the podcast before, that being a young kid, the first thing he wanted to focus on was himself and, you know, how he played from fullback.
Yeah.
And it was really great to see him just completely dominating some world-class players in tackles sometimes and stuff. And then that yellow card happened. It was really sad. And when he called him over, I thought, oh no, please don't send him off, Nigel. Please don't. So, Nigel, you're my dick of the day.
Deserve it. I also enjoyed when Chris Wiles came on. He played centre.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk, you know, because the USA were playing Italy a few days later. Like, they had a really short turnaround, so they rested a lot of the team. So it was very much a younger team. So, like... Tim Usaz played over Mike Petrie, and I've talked a lot on this, on the episode we've done in the USA, on how good Mike Petrie's been.
Yes.
And, and when he comes in, he puts in a really good kick as well. Like a really intelligent box kick. Tim Usaz, what a mad player. Yeah. What a mad player to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's... So the things he does are often genuinely world class. And then he'll just not be able to pass to a man stood next to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's so inconsistent. It's not like a lot of Tier 2 players are kind of a standard slightly below, of like, Premiership standard, you know? Like, they're kind of hitting, like, lower-end Premier, you know, whatever. You expect them to be at a certain tier. Tim Usaz is sometimes world-class, and sometimes he's just like, no, you know, I can't spin pass off that hand.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure he can, but still, you're kind of like... What's going on here? And he's screaming at everyone. He's shouting. He's pumping them all up. As I said, the USA looks so pumped up in that first 20 minutes, but especially him. And when he makes that break in the lead up to the USA try, he's going for it.
Yeah.
And he makes a few snipes where he looks furious with the defence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not going to tell any stories on here, partially because I don't quite remember them. But I have heard some stories about what Tim Eustace is like on a night out. and he is not the sort of guy to have two beers and be in by 10.
Yeah, as I say, he probably can't remember them either.
Yeah, yeah. He was, of course, raised in Australia, played for America, lived in the UK to play for Nottingham, and was nicknamed Russian. So I can't get my head around that, but yeah.
I guess that must be a Russian surname, Eustace.
Yeah, maybe. It's got USA in his name, though, so
he has, to be
that's
fair.
Pretty cool.
You can't get any more American than that.
Yeah.
Have you got any other contenders for the dick of the day?
No, I've covered them all.
Okay. I've got, Flores, the USA 7, Ignaki Flores, who I did not remember at all.
Maybe because the USA number 7 wasn't called Ignaki. Oh, Ignaki Basuri. Sorry. I'm with you now.
I didn't remember him at all. I had to look up who he was on ESPN Scrummy's listed as Ignaki Flores.
Right.
Ignaki Basuri Flores. Fine. Okay. Twice he entered the ruck through. Once he enters right in the side, you know, there's the kind of number it picks and goes from a scrum. And he just dives over the top from the side of the scrum. And another time he's retreating back from a kick. And he enters the ruck from the Australian side. And both times he gets away with it.
Huh.
So I don't quite know what.
Yeah. Does that make you
there.
A dick of the day or.
Is he in contention? Yeah. Or is he man of the match for just these Jedi mind powers over Nigel Owens?
Yeah, exactly.
I was astounded by his ability to get away with things.
Yeah.
Should we move on to. Speaking of ability to get away with things, man of the match. Mine is a split between two people. The first divided man of the match.
Interesting.
But it's whoever was kind of filling in a certain position. So my man of the first half is Curtly Beale. My man of the second half is Berrick Barnes. Berrick Barnes comes on for Curtly Beale at half time. So it's a split between those two.
Okay.
And yeah, just getting away with things, Curtly Beale his entire career.
Well, I'm going to complete the triangle of the players you're going for because my man of the match is Quade Cooper.
Okay.
He sets up a shed load of tries from just stepping people, and there's a few just like a few times where he just decides to go on incredibly horny runs for no reason. And
well, like, what horny runs?
Nice. There's one in particular where I don't think it particularly leads to anything, but he has Colin Hawley kind of wrapped around his little finger, and like,
wouldn't
he
we
has,
all like that?
Yeah. He has about 3 meters between himself and the touchline. He has Drew Mitchell outside him, and he's still throwing the dummy like he's going to pass it to somebody who's basically out. And Colin Hawley turns his back, and he manages to step inside and outside him about 3 times within, 5 yards of the touchline. It's really incredible. Yeah, and he just decides to just do a few filthy things just for the sake of it, and it's just great to watch. And seeing Quade play fullback and getting all the space against America is just a joy. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, my man of the match is Quade Cooper.
No, I can't argue with Quade.
Yeah.
But yeah, Curtly Beale and Berrick Barnes. I mean, when Berrick Barnes comes on, he's simultaneously the player we think of Berrick Barnes as, which is this kind of, he's a very shape-based player in that he has that kind of low kick trajectory. He loves a kick, doesn't he? But he's also playing a bit like a Quade in that he's running everything and he's running off lows and he scores a try and he kind of, he's excellent in every regard.
He's very
competent.
And I
always thought he was an underrated player, because I think he was one of those players who, for some reason, people would say is shit and I never got why.
No, he was brilliant. And he was great in, like, several positions as well.
Mm. Yeah, and, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, obviously he plays fly half in this game, but, for example, as the third place playoff later on in the tournament, not to do spoilers or anything, but he plays like 2 or 3 positions in that game and he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And like, was it the rugby championship after this, I guess? Where he was really brilliant and he had to play again 2 or 3 different positions. And then of course he played fullback against the Lions in 2013.
Of course he did, yes.
Yeah. No, he had a great career, Berrick Barnes. Very good player.
Yeah. And of course, really good rugby league player as well. And I think it was maybe that drifting in between. I don't know. Anyway, okay. Does that roughly bring us through?
Yeah, I guess so. We've rambled for about an hour now. Yeah.
We've actually talked about rugby, which is weird.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Like, there's been no bits. We just talked about the actual game.
Yeah.
Let us know if you think this works. If so, I think there's a podcast in this, maybe. A podcast where we actually talk about rugby matches. Yeah. Why is it we picked this game to talk about, to actually talk about?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess there's a lot of tries and there's so many lion taming.
There's so many really good games where we haven't talked about the rugby.
Yeah, I know.
And then this
one. What, any Irish fans will be really pissed off because in the Ireland-Australia match, we just did not talk about rugby at all. Whereas in this Australia match, we've just talked about rugby solidly. So, sorry for that.
Yeah. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that. I hope you've done some good listening. I hope the walk you've gone for, the commute you've been doing, the menial task you've been completing alongside have been fruitful and helpful and have profited your life. And I hope you'll join us next time when the match will be England against Romania from the 2011 Rugby World Cups. After that, right, coming up, we have New Zealand against France.
Oh, yes.
We have Fiji against Samoa. And we have Ireland against Vusha.
What a lineup.
And then actually the game after that, I was going to stop there, stop teasing. But Argentina-Scotland, which is one of the games of the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, this is exciting. This is a good lineup we have coming up, so.
Yeah.
Keep listening.
We're halfway
through. Keep kayaking. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Tournament. You know, we've got 23 games. This is the 23rd game.
Right.
There are of course, 40 pool games.
Right.
So, we're over halfway through the pool games. We're now. The next one is.
Yeah,
halfway through the pool tournament.
That's crazy.
I know.
Wow.
It sort of felt when we started like we'd never achieve it.
Yeah.
We'd never get all the way.
And it still feels like that a bit, but...
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Wow. Well, thank you for joining us, as ever.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll see you next time for England against Romania. Against Roman Poit. England play Roman Poit next.
Goodbye.
Bye. See ya.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.